turbocharged backpack. Genius sisters using like a lab rat. Super busy mouth. The boy's best friend is a talking dog.
A talking dog.
That's right. Three extreme teams and an everything sharp. Big action, get control, they're skating in the park. Girl, would you blink, why do we make up this? Johnny Test. Johnny Test. This is the life of a boy named Johnny Test.
From Real Q. Could I have you guys introduce yourselves and talk a little about your work right now?
Yeah, hello. I'm TJ Murphy. I'm the executive director of Real Q. Real Q is in our 40th year as Pittsburgh's longest running film festival. And we are the sixth oldest queer film festival, which is right here in Pittsburgh, which is crazy. We'll be running October 2nd or October 3rd through the 11th. And yeah, Em, you want to take it away?
Hi, everybody. I'm Emily Volker. I'm our digital media director, which started because I was the youngest person on the board and no one else wanted to do social media. But now I do other things as well. Been with Real Q for about 4 or 5 years. So,
yeah. So as you were mentioning, it's been running for 40 years. So can you tell me a little about the history and maybe how things have evolved? Since, I mean, 40 years ago was a long time. I'm sure things are different now in film and, like, in the world.
Yeah, absolutely. I think I can safely say that none of the three of us were alive when the festival started. it began in 1985. It started a little bit earlier as more of, like, a film club through what was the Pittsburgh Gay and Lesbian Community Center, which is now the Pittsburgh Equality Center. Pittsburgh Filmmakers, which is no longer active, and the University of Pittsburgh. So it sort of started as like a very chill, come to some screening rooms. These movies are not playing anywhere. They were bringing things in on reels still at that point, or, you know, videotapes were being mailed in. And then in 1984, you know, that group started to expand and decided that they wanted to incorporate into a nonprofit and do something a little bit more substantial to present to the community, because the need was really there. So they started out at the Fulton Theater downtown, which is now the Benedum, with 1,000 audience members in attendance for some of these screenings. We were the East Coast premiere of My Own Private Idaho, Gus Van Sant's film, as well as, I think, several other short films, experimental films. So from there, I think it really evolved into, you know, more and more people joining our board, more and more people joining our programming committee to figure out what films to screen, and expanded to, I think, venues at this point, probably all over the city. I think we've probably been at every theater that exists and has existed to screen films at this point.
When this started, I mean, there were protests, like, outside the theaters. Like, people came and picketed a couple of the years, right?
Yeah, absolutely. There's photos and newspaper clippings from Pittsburgh Out Magazine, which was our gay publication. People literally organizing protests outside of the theaters because of the films that were being screened. You know, and we're not talking, like, risque, crazy films or anything that would have been offensive outside of the fact that they were just, it was queer content.
That's a long history, but now we're 40 years in. Can you tell me a little about what this year's film festival is going to look like and what you're most excited for?
Yeah, absolutely. So why I actually said we started on October 2nd through the 11th is Friday the 2nd, or Thursday the 2nd, we'll be starting out with a pre-festival kickoff happy hour at 50 to 1, open to everyone. We'll have some light food, drink specials. The board will be there and everybody can come learn more about the films, talk to some of our programming committee. But something we're really excited about is opening night, October 3rd at the Andy Warhol Museum. We're doing a Pittsburgh Shorts retrospective throughout the decades that we've been around. So it's been a fun challenge to track down some of these films, especially from the 80s and early 90s. Some of them had not really been digitized yet. And, you know, we're really excited to be bringing some of these probably back for the first time since they would have screened back then. The following Saturday, the 4th and 5th, we'll be at Row House Cinema in Lawrenceville with a full lineup of documentaries, another shorts program, and something we're really excited about. And I know Em can talk a little bit about this as well. But a screening of the 20th anniversary screening of a documentary about Venus of Mars, the lead singer of All the Pretty Horses, a really pioneering trans punk band, sort of glam rock, too. Very non-label-y is kind of like how she likes to present. And she will be joining us for a concert after the film at Trace Brewing in Bloomfield. So that'll be a really exciting Saturday night.
Yeah, I'm super pumped for that. TJ, you can tell me this is like not a good comparison because you've seen the movie. I haven't seen it yet. So I didn't do the programming this year. So all of this is going to be like fun and new stuff for me. But I was just posting the other day about the Venus of Mars and was posting the trailer online. And I was like, oh, is this like what Hedwig and the Angry Inch was like trying to be? No, hey, I love that movie, but I was like, oh, like this is like so rock and roll and this is so queer and cool and like just like instantly awesome that I was like, oh, is like that, is that what, like, was this like the OG kind of like, I don't know. Did you feel that at all? Or am I like,
yeah, definitely. I'm like, because it would have been around, I mean, it's the 20th anniversary of the documentary, but obviously not like a lot of the content that the documentary is presenting. I mean, there's a lot of like clips and stuff from like the early 80s and things like that. So like, yes, I'm surprised I didn't put that together. That there definitely it is like, it's a real life sort of snapshot of what that era of like gender fluid, you know, dive bar concerts would have been.
I'm so excited for that. And it's going to be so cool to see Venus play a show afterwards. I think like this year we really tried to have, I mean, movies are what we love. That's what we're about. But like, there's a lot of other things happening too. You know, there's this concert, there's panels and Q&As, there's parties. I just think it's going to be, we're going to have a story circle. I think there's going to be like a lot of cool human interaction. You know, like you can go, because sometimes you go to the movies and you leave. And I do love my like just me at the movies time sometimes. But sometimes you go to something and you're in your community and afterwards you're like, people there seem nice. I wish I could have talked to them. But I think we have a lot of opportunities here this time to like actually get to chat with your fellow moviegoers in your community. And I think that's going to be a blast.
And speaking of that, that Sunday, the 5th, also at Row House, we'll be closing out that weekend there with a screening of the documentary United in Anger about the history of the ACT UP organization. It's a really fantastic documentary. It's older. We're bringing it back. We've screened it before. But why it's so relevant now, and especially in Pittsburgh, is our ACT UP chapter, along with other chapters across the country, have really started to form again this year. And I know there were several protests that they have been, that they've planned this year and done sort of really publicly. And so they are premiering then a short film about their first protest that they did in July, which was when President Trump visited CMU's campus, and they did a funeral march. It was a very beautiful sort of thing. So we're premiering that documentary about the planning of that march, and then we'll have a panel of some of the people that are involved in ACT UP currently in Pittsburgh and some people that were there when it was initially, you know, when our chapter would have been initially started in the mid 80s. So that should be really, one, I think, really informative, but also I think a lot of fun in the sense of like getting to meet people in the community that are really trying to make change.
Yeah. So a while back, Em, you said that you're all about movies and that's what you love. Although you do have, of course, all these other sort of interactions. Can you tell me a little about why you think film is such a powerful and important medium that you have like a whole organization devoted to it?
It's interesting. Like, I mean, I think when someone tells me they don't watch movies, I'm like, I don't trust you. That's not true. Everybody, I'm not going to yuck anybody's yum. Everybody is different. But I think they're just a really powerful, for me, I love stories. I love storytelling. I think they're a really powerful way to do storytelling, given that they combine, you know, visual and audio mediums into one. And I also love theater. But isn't it nice that you can have movies recorded and watch them again and again? And I just think it's weird sometimes now to think about, there's so much more to do, in terms of getting queer representation in all types of media, including film. But I just think it's extra interesting and valuable to remember that, like, when this festival started, how infinitely harder that was. You know, I mean, we can stream things now. You know, I can go on YouTube and, you know, kind of find most things I might want to find. But to think of, like, when this was something you needed to, like, go locate the physical reel of film and hope someone with a projector would screen it. It really brings home how valuable this festival and festivals like it.
I want to interject really quick about that. I was just speaking with our festival founder, Rich Cummings, last week. And he really started the festival, I mean, fully on his own. It was his brainchild baby. He just was a big movie buff. And somebody asked him, you know, how did you find these films? And I was like, that's something I actually never really thought about.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, great, there was no internet. I mean, there's no like, I mean, it wouldn't be like you could call a lot of distributors or something like that like you would today. I mean, there were, not to say that there weren't distributors that were out there, but I mean, it would have been nothing like it was even 10 years ago, right? And he was like, I mean, you had to like go places and meet people and get their business cards and get their phone numbers and then call them like every year and be like, hey, like, what have you seen? Can you send me, like you just said, Em, can you send me the reel for this movie? Can you send me like a VHS copy of this film so we can watch it and decide whether or not we want to screen it? And it was just like, I'm like, that we think it's so difficult to put all this stuff together today and to put it in that perspective. I'm like, oh my gosh, like I can't even imagine the amount of work and energy that went into that.
Yeah, I can't either. I mean, I'm like, I think it's
right.
A challenge for us sometimes, and we can just Google things.
Right.
But yeah, it's really, I mean, that's partially our name is, you know, there's in movies, you know, sometimes like reel A, reel B of a film. So, you know, reel Q is, you know, this kind of, I mean, one of the themes one year was like, see yourself in the movies, and you guys did like a photo shoot recreating like classic movie posters in drag, I think, right? So that's kind of what we're about, you know, is getting to see yourself in the movies. And I mean, it's still so relevant today. Like it's still really important.
Yeah. So I know Pittsburgh has a bit of a film community. There's a bunch of shows or like sections of movies or whatever that are filmed here. So how do you guys see yourselves in the larger Pittsburgh film community, or are you kind of more your own thing?
It's a small world in its own way. I mean, people tend to, we don't do production at the film festival. Film people all tend to kind of know each other. I mean, there's just such a good scene for independent film here and for, Hollywood, you know, comes here and films so much.
So, I mean, I think sometimes if we can't always financially support local filmmakers in the queer community, we can definitely present those films. We've had a number of premieres of shorts and even feature films that were made by people from here and were made, you know, physically here as well. And trying to create events like that, that, you know, give them the dignity and the space that they deserve from our community.
Yeah, we always love having local premieres from local filmmakers. That's always a blast. That's one of my favorite things.
And I think that's why it was important for us to open this festival this year on that retrospective, to sort of highlight that in one way or another, there has always been queer media being made in Pittsburgh.
To keep on the theme of community, I was wondering how you guys see yourselves within the larger Pittsburgh queer community. Because as you said, you're showing films about activists, or say you're starting out at, you know, a queer bar. But how do you see yourselves within the larger context?
I think we fit everywhere. I mean, we really strive to make our festival extremely diverse, and that's something that's always been true for us. We want to encapsulate the entirety of the LGBTQ plus community. And the thing about the LGBTQ plus community is that it does encompass every person of a walk of life, right? So we really strive to highlight those stories, like, you know, whether that's through documentaries, whether that's through, you know, narrative films, whatever we can, to really bring people together. And as Em said earlier, to like, see yourself in the films. And I think that's sort of how we connect, is being able to present those stories to people.
Yeah, I mean, and we also do like so much partnership with other organizations. And we've worked with Project Silk before, the Community Center, the Community Center, right? Who else have we worked with lately? I mean, we're the fiscal sponsor for the Backyard Docs Film Festival. I mean, I think it would also be cool to talk on that note about, you know, our closing night screening is the screening of a film called Transsexual Menace. And the connection there is, you know, we're working with the Wendy Miller Legacy Project. Film kind of is going to go through, it's a really wonderful kind of walk through 90s trans activism. And it highlights, you know, the first transgender lobby day in DC when activists marched through the halls of Congress. And like the biggest regional contingency of people came from Pittsburgh, led by Wendy Miller.
Yeah. So Wendy Miller was a transgender woman. She passed away just a few years ago. Who owned a frame shop that is still open in East Liberty. And she used that sort of like community power that she had of owning this local shop for so many years to start holding trans meetups in the back of the shop, even like in the early 80s, late 70s. So her son, Cooper, has put together then the Wendy Miller Legacy Project, which will start to archive her massive collection of things. So we're excited to be screening, yeah, that film for sure with them. We'll have a nice, neat little panel afterwards that Cooper's putting together. We'll be hosting that at Mary's Bar, which is a newish gay bar in Garfield on Penn Avenue. And that, I think it'll be a really fun time. It's a really fantastic documentary.
Obviously, you're about to do this film festival, so we've talked a lot about it, but I wanted to know if you guys do any sort of year-round programming or if it's all leading up to this moment.
Yes, no, we do. we do quarterly screenings at City of Asylum on the north side. They're open to the public. They highlight international queer cinema. They're really fantastic. We'll have one coming up in November to wrap up our year. We also are starting up our Real Youth series, which is a series for people under 20. We'll kind of be moving around to different venues starting in 2026 with that. And we always are sort of planning little like one-off events to speak with Em said, with partner organizations, in, you know, venues across the city. So definitely look out for some stuff like that next year.
You're screening queer works in, I think, what is becoming an increasingly hostile environment politically. So how do you find your place in the modern day? Because as you were saying, you can go back to 80s, 90s activism and share about that. But how are you dealing with the current situation?
I mean, I think it just feels good to create stuff. Honestly, for me, like, this is one more of a personal note, but I just feel like it feels really good to, one, create things, make stuff, and it feels really good to be with people doing that. So, I mean, this is always, for me, just being a part of organizing the festival and doing all the little things to make it happen. It's always, for me, a really cup-filling experience because I'm like working with other queer people to tell queer stories, and then we celebrate and also like hold space for you know, somber moments, like all the stories that you see in this festival. There's the full range of emotion around them, and but we really have also a lot of space for fun and celebration, and it, I don't know, it really just keeps me feeling buoyed as a part of doing it. And I hope other people feel that as well. We had a nice talk back at an event a couple months ago that we did at City of Asylum. It was Queer Shorts for Palestine event. And we had a discussion group afterwards, and people really had some great conversations, and people kept coming up to us being like, I'm so glad I got to talk to people. Like we thought people would want to chat, and people, and that was your idea, TJ. And people did just keep coming up to us and be like, oh, it's so nice to like talk to people. And we've done that before. We filmed this, you know, did a film from South Korea, and a woman in one of the discussion groups was like, yeah, that's, I'm far from home right now, and it's nice to meet people in this new town, you know, watching a movie that, you know, kind of, I might be off topic there.
She was from Korea.
Wasn't she? Okay. I was dancing.
Yeah. Yeah. She like, said, that's what she was like. This yeah, was just like, so wonderful. It made me like, it reminds me of home. Like I've, you know, I'm like really homesick.
Okay, I was like, I'm pretty sure her quote was that awesome. And I was like, wasn't that? It was, yeah. That's what she said.
I would just add to that is, and I say this every year, you know, when we ask about like, what's the difference of like coming to see a film in the theater versus a film festival? And outside of like the obvious things that these films are like not released yet, it's really about creating community space and getting to like have those conversations in more curated ways. But I think for particularly for our festival, and to like sort of answer your question, it's to create safe spaces for our community. And that's what we, you know, have strived to do every year, but it feels more relevant now than it has in recent years even, to make sure that we're bringing people together in safe and expressive spaces.
So speaking of, you know, what you were saying at a recent talkback, are there any particular experiences or memories of being involved in this festival that really stick out in your memory?
Well, I should mention, this is my 15th year being involved in one way or another with Real Q. So I have a lot. Because Em already brought up John Cameron Mitchell, I think we brought him in 2018. For a whole weekend of his films, and he stayed with us for 2 days, and that was really very much a highlight for me as a programmer being involved with the festival. And I think just seeing also in generally how the festival has evolved since I've started.
Do you want to say a little more about how it's evolved?
Well, I could say when I started, it was our 25th anniversary, and we were still called the Pittsburgh International Lesbian and Gay Film Festival. And I got in there at the tail beginning of when the conversation was starting about how we needed to change our name because it was not inclusive to the things that we were presenting. And so we actually did an audience vote the following year. And that's how we became Real Q then.
And Em, anything that stands out to you in your memory from your years of involvement?
Yeah, that's so funny you mentioned about, I guess you guys are the reason John Cameron Mitchell came to town. I wasn't involved then, but I came to one of the events and I got to hug him. And so I wasn't even involved yet and I was still getting highlights. I mean, for me, I would have to say just some of these story circle or like kind of talk back events we've had where people have gotten to talk amongst each other. And we had like a speed friending event. I think that was so fun. That was just really nice to see people getting to talk and get to know each other and get to sort of build community. It was nice to facilitate moments where people could talk to each other. I don't know. It's kind of all been really fun. It's kind of a treat every time you get to tell someone, hey, like, did you know the 6th oldest queer film festival in the world is here in Pittsburgh? Little Pittsburgh, we got that claim to fame, you know? So
are there any specific challenges that you've had to overcome that really stick out to you, especially because you've been here so many years between the two of you?
I mean, to speak bluntly, and this is even not a new challenge, but it's been challenging even recently, is financing. We are a nonprofit. We're totally volunteer run. We are primarily funded through local foundations, donations, a few sponsorships. But being able to sort of never know how much money we're going to have in the bank next year has always been a fairly consistent challenge with us. But we've to this day been able to weather through it still.
Yeah, I would echo that. I think that's definitely the main thing. Sometimes it's just spreading the word too. Especially I think when people sometimes don't go to the movies as much as they used to. But I think this is kind of a nice example of how nice it can be to go to the movies and get to watch things with people. Cause like kind of we've said before, some of these things you can't stream ever. Like you'll never find them. Some of them eventually, maybe you'll find them. But pretty much
I can't name how many films we've shown that have like won audience awards or like where everybody's like favorite film that like don't exist anywhere. I would probably go as far to say the majority of films we've screened in our history they don't end up on streaming platforms, maybe outside of being able to rent it or buy it on Amazon or something, but they just sort of disappear, for lack of a better word. So, it can be nice then to present those films, get people excited about them, and then hopefully that drums up some excitement for those films to get picked up too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's all the more reason to come out and get to see something that you might not actually get the opportunity to see again, and you pretty much definitely will not get the opportunity to see with other people.
And I guess one more thing to piggyback off of what Em said earlier about kind of getting the word out. You know, we try really hard every year, but something to speak to like the community in Pittsburgh in general, it's like, it's a good problem and a bad problem, but there's so many things to do all the time. So especially it seems like around now, and especially with like within the gay community in Pittsburgh. So, we hope people choose us too.
So we are running low on time. So I wanted to ask if there's anything else you want to say or that you wish I asked that you didn't get a chance to beforehand.
Well, I would like to just mention that the last 2 days of our festival, October 10th and 11th, will be at CMU, actually. We will be screening the regional premiere of Lesbian Space Princess. It's a feature-length animated film. It's a lot of fun. I urge everyone to go look at the trailer. And then we have some really fantastic documentaries that we'll be bringing. So if you're a CMU student, you don't even have to leave campus to come to our festival.
Yeah, including a teen shorts compilation, which will be really cool.
Well, thank you so much for being here. As I said, this is Forbes Avenue on WRCT Pittsburgh. I've had M. Bulker and TJ Murphy from Real Q here to talk about Pittsburgh's Queer Film Festival. For more information, you can check out their website. What's the website at?
RealQ.org.
Spelled like a movie reel. RealQ.org.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for being here. This was really fun.
Thank you.
Thank you. This was great.
Last song. And before this, Hiroko Moriguchi with Mizuno Hoshie, I will komete, komete. So that's To the Aqueous Star with Love. Yeah, so that's the end of Zeta Gun. It's the end of Grey Storm. Thinking about endings of things, crazy endings. Is it good, is it bad? I don't know. There's another show. Thanks for tuning in today with me, DJ Al, in the Land of Twilight on WRCT Pittsburgh. See you next Friday.
This is WRCT Pittsburgh. You are listening to Pillow Fight. those last three were It Ain't What You Do, It's the Way That You Do It by Funboy 3 and Bananarama, Bam Bam by Sister Nancy. This is like my song of the week because I feel like it's such a perfect summer song. It's like so fun and funky. And then Cycling Is Fun by Shonen Knife. Shonen Knife were the first known all-female Japanese punk band. And I think the context is like they were being interviewed and the interviewer was like kind of asking them to respond to the fact that so many other punk bands have like explicitly political lyrics. And they were like, we believe music should be fun. And that's kind of the theme of today's show. Like I was loosely trying to pick songs that I just find really fun and like upbeat and happy. So next up is Elevator Operator by Courtney Barnett.
Side of you.
Okay, those last three were Elevator Operator by Courtney Barnett, Blanket of My Bone by Being Dead, and Venus by Television. If you are interested in hearing different music from what I'm playing, you can check out some of WRCT's other shows, such as The Forever Show, The Inverse, The Obverse, The Converse, The Reverse, with DJ New Angle on 88.3 WRCT, the only show ever, Tuesday at 2 p.m. Or Afraid of the Dark. Turn the dial to Afraid of the Dark to hear cover songs that will keep the monsters away all night, Thursdays at 6 p.m. Basically, I made my playlist for this show like earlier in the week, and then I just flicked on WRCT throughout the week and heard these two shows, and both of them played a song that I already had included on the playlist, so I was like, let me give them a shout out. If you like what I'm playing or hate what I'm playing or want to hear something else, you can give me a call at 412-268-9728. And if you request a song, I'll definitely listen to it on my own time and I might play it. For the time being, here is Blown to Bits by Charlie Bliss. Life has a new-